Hey, this is Daniel, and you're listening to Rushing Forward.
Hey, welcome to another episode of the Rushing Forward podcast. Today we have Ciora, a software engineer currently focused on Python and cloud engineering. She also happens to be a learner advocate at egghead.io, a coding teacher at BSD Education, and an instructor assistant at Code with Clossy during the summer. Did I say all of those things right?
Yes.
Okay, that's great. I mean, that's a good start. I usually butcher something in the intro.
No, that was perfect.
Thank you. I mean, I think it's a sign. All right, I mean, your intro is pretty interesting. Like, the first thing that hits my head is, like, what is a learner advocate?
So a learner advocate is actually really similar to what a developer advocate does, just probably on a more basic level, because usually a developer advocate has a whole lot of, well, not a whole lot, but has some more software engineering or web development experience. So a learner advocate, basically, like, the Egghead.io platform has a bunch of courses for web developers. So what I do is I'll take the courses and I'll take notes on the courses, and I'll help, like, spread the word about different courses and things like that. And also there are weekly workshops that are led by industry experts. So sometimes I'll attend those workshops, and I'll try to participate as much as possible, and I'll also give feedback to the people leading the workshops, the instructors, and things like that. So it has a lot of parallels to, like, developer advocacy, in that you kind of promote the product in a way by putting yourself out there and being involved in different communities online. So yeah, basically that's more or less what I do for Egghead.
Well, that's pretty interesting. I haven't really, like, I understand what Egghead does. I've checked out a few of the free courses, and like, I'm really intrigued by the whole concept of screencasting, because I think everyone's got, like, different ways of learning. Most of the content that's out there is quite, it's written, and I think that visual aspect brings a new dimension to how people learn. How did you get into the role?
Okay, so I love telling this story because it really shows the power of social media, and especially Twitter, for anybody involved in tech. So I, a few months ago, I had, like, taken a super long hiatus from writing on Dev.2. And I finally put, like, after I think like 6 or 7 months, I finally published, like, another article. And the article was titled something like Mistakes I Made My First Year Learning to Code, something like that. And I published it, and I was, like, talking about it on Twitter just to get more people to read it. And one of the co-founders of Egghead commented under my tweet, and he asked if I wanted to give a talk about the article I wrote on the Egghead platform. So, like, every now and then they'll have guests come, and they'll give a talk about whatever their field of expertise is. So he asked if I wanted to do that, and the talks are usually like 15 to 30 minutes. And I was like, what? Like, yeah. So I filled out the form. I filled out the form, and it's, like, it's funny because it took me a really long time to fill out the form, because I was, like, second guessing myself. You know how imposter syndrome is. And at one point I was like, okay, I'm not going to do this. Like, this isn't for me. But eventually I filled out the form, and then someone else from the company contacted me maybe like a week later. And he asked if I was still interested in giving the talk, and I said yes. But when I was filling out the form, I had noticed that they have a position. Like, you can be an instructor, you can be someone who gives a talk, and then they also had listed learner advocate. So I asked him about it. I was like, I'm interested in this, learning more about this learner advocate position. So I scheduled a Zoom call with him, and here I am.
Hey,
all through Twitter.
I'm all for shooting your shot on Twitter. I mean, I used to be much better at doing it, but I've had like this whole break where, I don't know, social media hasn't been making sense to me. But I mean, it's lovely to see that. And I really tell everyone who's getting into tech, or I try and tell them that Twitter is such an amazing platform to be in. It has just so many good people sharing so many nice things. I mean, congratulations. How long have you been
there? Thank you. So I started in April, so it hasn't really been that long. Just over
like
a month.
Ago.
Yeah.
I'm really shocked I know what month this is. Because time is moving so fast. That's amazing. That is really cool. And
thank you.
What has been your tech journey? What's that been? Is something you used when you were learning to code?
I think I had like used one of the free resources for like something with CSS before, but I hadn't really used it often. Like I knew about it. I followed like the Egghead account on Twitter and that kind of thing, but I didn't use the platform that much. Going back to your question about like my journey into tech, it's been super like not straightforward, which I think
it never is, to be honest.
Yeah, I think that's like the norm for most people. I used to think I was like weird for like going back and forth and taking breaks that were months long and all that kind of stuff. So I guess I can say, wow, my journey in tech. When I was in high school, you know, when you're like a high school junior or high school senior, everyone's thinking about like, oh, what are you going to do for a career? Like, what are you going to major in college and all that kind of stuff. And I was kind of familiar with what like computer science was, but not really. Like, I like technology. I like math and science. So I thought, you know, maybe that's an option for me, but I wasn't like 100% sure. And anyway, like my junior year of high school was like the worst year ever. My grades were just horrible. Like, I don't know. I think I had switched schools, so I was like having a hard time transitioning. Like, it just was not a good year. So I was kind of like, okay, and my grades were like, my GPA went from like my 10th grade year. Like, I'm not even joking, because I just found all my records from high school, and I saw like my GPA, and I was so shocked to see how like the jump from my 10th grade year to my 11th grade year. 10th grade, my GPA was a 4.07. 11th
That's out of 5?
No, it's actually out of 4, but I took like AP classes, and AP classes are worth a little bit more.
Oh, okay.
So you get like extra. And then my junior year, 11th grade, my GPA went from a 4.07 to a 2.1 because
that's a big
my grade. It is. It really is. So I was, and you know, when you go to college, like they look at your junior year, they look at your SAT scores, they look at all that from junior year. So I was like, okay, college is off the table. Like I was like not communicating with any of my school counselors. Like if I could do high school over again, I definitely would, because there were so many things that I did that just were not, they just weren't good moves. So I was like, okay, college is off the table. Like, that's not going to be something for me. And so I kind of like put computer science as a, like a field for me on the back burner. And then I think the summer of my junior year, so between junior and senior year, I had met, I don't know if you know her, she's pretty active on Twitter. She's a founder now. Her name is Naya Moss. I had met her through some mutual.
I'll search her.
Yeah, you should follow her on Twitter. She's awesome. I met her through some mutual friends. And I don't know if she was a software engineer at the time, but she was kind of telling me about it. And she was like, you don't have to go to college to be a software engineer. Like, you can definitely self-learn, or you can go to a boot camp and things like that. And so that's when I kind of really thought about it seriously as a move for me. And she sent me, like, a bunch of resources. And in all honesty, I really didn't do anything with it. Like, I wish I would have taken some of the things she sent me and like actually used them, but I didn't. So, but the good thing is that my senior year of high school, I had some, I had like an HTML class, HTML CSS class, and then I had a C++ class. So I kind of got a feel for what coding was kind of like. And then this is going to be a long story.
That's like, no, it's fine. So that's like basic HTML. Like I remember having something similar in my, my senior 12th grade where we'd use like the Margie tag and just like let data and do like old school 90s websites where it's a bunch of, what do you call them? Marquees, I guess. Yeah, but that was fun.
Yeah,
I really didn't pay attention to it at that time either.
Yeah, no, I don't think I took it. I just wanted to pass. Like, honestly, exactly. So, but that the summer of my senior year, like, I wasn't going to college. I wasn't doing anything. I was kind of like just I don't know what I was doing. But I had signed up for CoWIS Clausy, which is a program in the United States. It's a nonprofit organization where they host 2-week camps across the country. And in those 2 weeks, you can either learn how to make a website or you can learn how to make an iOS app. So I applied and I got accepted to the program, and I learned, I learned HTML, CSS, and Ruby in 2 weeks, and we made websites. And I had like so much fun, and I really realized that like I had a knack for coding and like designing stuff, and I really liked the problem solving side of things. So I decided like, okay, this is something that I really want to do. But then after that, okay, I decided I wanted to do it. Then it was like, okay, so how am I going to learn how to do it? Like, am I going to go to a boot camp? Am I going to do this? I don't have any money for a boot camp, so I decided to try to self-learn, but it just...
And how did that go?
It was... Self-learning was, like, tough because I didn't have the discipline or the focus, especially those first few months. Like, September of 2018, I had just finished the camp, and I was, like, I kind of, like, put everything on the back burner, and my goal at that point was... I need to find a job. Like, I definitely want to learn how to code, but I need to do something, like learn something now that I can find a job with, because I'm not a rich person. Like, I need to have something.
Yeah, I need that job.
Yeah. So what ended up happening was I got started in digital marketing. My friend who I told you that introduced me to tech in the first place, Naya Moss, she had started her company and she needed somebody to help with like social media and community management. So that's what I decided to do. I decided to help her with that. And so my first year out of high school, I pretty much put coding on the back burner and focused more on digital marketing. Like I still did, I would like start from the beginning, like start from HTML and CSS and then take like a 4-month break. And then have to relearn HTML and CSS again, and then take a month break and have to relearn it again. So I was just like, it was a really like 2 steps forward, 2 steps back, 2 steps like that kind of thing. For like a
whole.
I
think when did it click that this is something I should probably pay attention to and build a career in? Like when did that come up?
So, what ended up happening was summer 2019. I went back to CoWIS Clausy, but this time as an instructor assistant, and I was teaching the, I was helping to teach the iOS development course, which was super hard, but I realized, again, I really liked to code. I liked helping the students, like, debug their code. Because sometimes we would run into these really strange coding errors, and I was like, I don't know what's going on. But I enjoyed like the, you know, that feeling you get when you finally solve a problem and like you get the solution right and it's like the best feeling in the world. Like I love that feeling. So that's what I kind of realized.
It's very fulfilling.
Yeah. And it's super rewarding. So I realized that that was something I really, really liked. So then I was like, maybe I should focus less on digital marketing and more on coding, like get more into that, because I mean, digital marketing is still something that I really like, but it didn't give me that, like, I don't know, I didn't have that spark whenever I did it. So that's when I decided to like take coding a little bit more seriously. So yeah, that's what I've been trying to do.
Did you go into like web development? Because I know you love Python. Always love too much of an exaggeration.
No, love is perfect for Python. So what ended up happening was, again, I tried to get back into web development. And instead of like going back to the HTML and CSS, I moved on to just JavaScript. I was like, I'm not going to go back over that again and again and again. So I decided to get into JavaScript. And I was like making pretty good progress learning JavaScript. And then in November, I applied for a scholarship through Udacity. They had a program for, the scholarship was either for, I think, data analytics, cloud engineering, and then the other one was, like deep mobile learning or something like that or something. Yeah, something, one of those.
Yeah.
And maybe it was, but I applied for the cloud engineering scholarship and I got it. And the thing about cloud is that it plays a part in web development, especially when you start to get into back-end development, as far as like the whole serverless concept and everything. So I felt like, okay, this could like fit in. And then I determined that Python was, after like some research, I determined that Python was like a good language to know when you want to do cloud engineering. So that's when I started learning Python. And then I fell in love with Python, and now it's my favorite coding language.
Same. I mean, my journey started with Python also. So I got into Python. Okay. I've had like quite a similar experience. I did a lot of Android development, mobile development, because, you know, it was the in thing at that time.
Yeah.
Then I went into like Python, and like Python, because so I did computer science in college. I did the whole 4 years, but I still see myself as self-taught.
Yeah.
Because like, there was like studying programming to pass, and then like somewhere it clicked that, hey, I need to actually start enjoying this. And then that's when I started doing like Android stuff and getting into Python. So machine learning was also really huge at that time. So I really got sort of in depth in machine learning, and Python just started to make sense. It was just so easy to understand.
Yeah.
Like it was so easy to translate thoughts and ideas into like actual code and like programs that worked. And I still use it today. It's my favorite. But a lot of my work now is around JavaScript. So I mean, not that there's like any competition or conflict. I still really love both for what they bring. And I mean, like, for you talk about cloud technologies, like what does that look like? Is it like total backend engineering with like serverless functions and SRE, site reliability engineering, like what aspects does it encompass?
So for me, when I I'm really focusing more on like AWS and like more backend stuff with when it comes to cloud computing. Like I'm still trying to piece everything together and really figure out like where I want to fit in the whole like developer ecosystem. But the thing that like is super interesting to me is that instead of, I like how accessible cloud computing makes like having full stack apps, especially like for smaller businesses or people who are like a one person company, because before, you know, you had to have like your own servers and it cost a lot of money to maintain those servers. Like I was trying to explain how like cloud computing works to my parents, and I was explaining to them like, you know, when your computer gets super hot, you have to do whatever you can to like cool it down so that it doesn't like, you know, explode or like mess everything up. And so imagine that times like 100 with a bunch of servers, because you know, they are dependent on, like, the condition of your servers is dependent on a lot of different things, including, like, temperature, location, like, all that kind of stuff. So that's expensive. So what cloud computing allows you to do is it allows you to bypass all that, and you just rent out space on someone else's servers. And then the cool thing is that, so I find it really interesting. Honestly, I'm still trying to, like, piece everything together and, like, get a more in-depth understanding, especially, like, of the AWS platform, because it's, like, so much on there.
It's so interesting,
It is. It's so much. Like, it's almost a little bit overwhelming, but I'm trying to, like, work my way up to get my cloud practitioner certification. Because I think if I, like, if I schedule my test, if I schedule my exam, it'll, like, force me to really learn the concepts since I know, like, $100 is riding on it. So, yeah, I hope that answered your question.
It does.
Okay.
I'm thinking about something you said. I've never really thought about cloud computing from, like, the accessibility point of view, where it makes it much easier for people who wouldn't necessarily have access to all these physical devices and servers and compute power. I mean, I've just, like, I think it's just been something I've got used to, and I'm like, okay, it's there. And I'm assuming, okay, it's always been like that. But I mean, if you think about it, actually, it, like, how much easier it is to actually have a full stack application online working, scaling. Wow. Okay. It's like a whole, like, so many dots connecting. And, like, so you mentioned, like, you're trying to piece it all together. You must have, like, a vision of where you want to be. Or, like, that's your cat?
Yes. Sorry. let me, I'm going to, like, take her out of here really quick because she's, like, being annoyed.
Okay.
Okay. Sorry. But could you repeat the question?
Yeah, so you said you're trying to piece it all together, right?
Yeah.
Do you have an idea of, like, what you want to be, let's say, or where you want to be career-wise in the next, let's say, 2-3 years?
I'm, like, still trying to figure that out because I'm one of those people who finds, like, everything super interesting. So it's hard for me to, it's hard for me to, like, pinpoint where I want to be in the next couple years. But, like, the cool thing about, like, Python and cloud engineering is that it's kind of, like, easy to transition, I feel like, to a lot of different, like, avenues in tech. So, for instance, like, when it comes to cloud, a lot of times you're dealing with, like, servers, and then you're dealing with, like, databases, and then anytime you're dealing with a database means you're dealing with data. And so when it comes to data, I think data science is super interesting. I think machine learning and, like, deep learning is super interesting. So that's something I've been thinking about. But, I mean, for me, since I don't have a CS degree or, like, any kind of, like, STEM degree, I know that a lot of times with jobs for, like, data science and stuff like that, they're looking for people with that kind of experience. So I also have to think about, like, barrier to entry, because that is, like, a real thing. I would hate to, like, dedicate a whole lot of time to learning.
To something and then not see it pay out for what it's supposed to.
Yeah,
that is true. It's something I did notice in sort of the data science and Python community. Not necessarily Python, sorry, like data science and machine learning community. Because, like, it's so scientific. There's, I don't want to say, like, gatekeeping or anything, but there's a lot of paying attention to people's achievements, academic achievements, and then it's like, they correlate academic achievement to like proficiency in that technology, which I guess makes sense, but
there's
they don't leave much room for people from non-traditional backgrounds.
Yeah.
Which I think is something that needs to be improved on. But I mean, it's really good to think about that when you're thinking about all the things that you might want to get into later on. I mean, now that I ask you that, I'm trying to like ask myself what I see myself doing in like the next 2-3 years.
Yeah. But
anyway, that's about you. So what are you learning at the moment?
Oh my goodness, I feel like I'm like all over the place. And one of my like biggest tips when it comes to learning is like to focus and to not spread yourself too thin. And I never follow that advice myself. but what I'm learning right now is, of course, like I'm still in my cloud computing program, which I honestly need to dedicate more time to.
Oh, but, so you already booked like a date for your exam?
Oh, no. No, but the Udacity program I'm in is still going. Like, I'm not finished yet. I haven't, like...
How do you balance everything?
I don't know. I don't know. I'm, like... honestly, I really don't even know. I mean, I try... Well, first of all, I'm really horrible with keeping up with, like, my friends. So I don't have much of a, like... personal life social, right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, like social life,
it's
I guess
like
you could
a tech
say.
Thing.
Yeah. So I'm like, the good thing is that my friends understand, but right now, like I'm, especially since like quarantining anyway, like it's not like I can do a whole lot with them anyway, but I'm kind of like, even with my friends and like with my family as well, I'm like, okay, you guys, like I love y'all and everything, but I need to like focus on like getting all this stuff done. And I don't like I really don't watch a lot of TV. Like I don't keep up with a lot of like television or any of that stuff. But
no,
aside from like the weekends,
no secret Netflix show.
I mean, it's a huge distraction. So I have to like prioritize, especially, I mean, don't get me wrong. I have my Parks and Recreation binge watch marathon every Saturday and Sunday. But during the week, I'm, like, in hard focus mode because I've stuffed my schedule to the brim, which I guess is, like, not good.
But I think that helps you, like, do the stuff, actually, because I know I have a huge problem. I have a huge problem paying attention. So, like, if I need to get stuff done, I need to have, like, a set out structure and... I'm always on focus mode on my phone. So like no notifications. All my social media apps are done, locked.
Yeah.
And then I can work. Otherwise, it's terrible.
Yeah. Same. Like same here. I also use the Pomodoro technique. I don't know if you've heard of it before.
Yeah. I have this app called Forest. It's sort of a play on it. You sort of plant trees, and then That's a really good one, but I'm trying to get the discipline to stick to it and tell myself that I need to actually set the timer and do the work.
The
only time that I just start, right? And I would be like, let me just take a walk or let me open an app. And then that's a bad rabbit hole.
Yeah. But I try to, and another thing for me is like, I'm super, and this is why like self-learning was so hard for me is because I have the type of personality where I need external influence like to help me to feel accountable. Like I'm never accountable just to myself. So like that's why like when I was learning on my own, it was hard for me to stay consistent because it's like, oh, well, nobody's going to know if I skip like coding today. But I've been trying to create like to kind of work with what I know my personality is like. And I try to make myself accountable to other people. So like, if that means like someone, like even for my work at Egghead, like if I know someone is relying on me finishing something, I'm gonna get it done. Or even like, that's why I'm also a big proponent of like learning in public is because if I feel like people are looking at me for motivation to like, keep learning Python or to keep programming their whatever application they're making. Like I'm going to try my best to be consistent too. And to like, show that I'm making the effort to like build projects and finish projects and things like that. So that's another thing I try to do.
I've seen around, but I haven't properly understood how to reap the benefits I'm supposed to from it. What is it about? What's learning in public?
So learning in public is basically like, to simplify it, it's like anytime you share what you're learning with other people. So that could be 100 days of code on Twitter. If you're like every day consistently, oh, I'm working on this project today, I made this progress, yada, yada, yada. It's basically whenever you share what you're learning or what you're doing with others, whatever medium that is. So I try to share like, oh, I'm working on these notes, or I just learned this new concept in Python. I'll share that on Twitter. Also, another great way to learn in public is to write articles, which I try to do. I'm trying to work my way up, like my confidence up to writing more like tutorials and kind of get out of that mindset that I have to be an expert to write a tutorial. But writing is a great way to learn in public. Some people stream and they'll stream themselves like learning something new or like working on a program. People make YouTube videos, like all that kind of stuff is considered learning in public. And the great thing about learning in public to me too is that a lot of times when you're learning in public, you're almost like teaching what you're learning. Yeah. And when you teach what you're learning, it kind of solidifies it for you. So I think teaching is a great way to learn a concept yourself, because if you're going to teach it, you kind of feel like you need to know the information enough to be able to communicate the concepts in an understandable way. So that's why I really, really like learning in public. I'm not like great at it. I definitely could do a lot better.
No, I think you're doing amazing. I think you're doing
thank you.
I do the article part of learning in public, I guess. I've done quite a lot of writing in the past, like ever, like since the whole quarantine thing started, I've been doing a lot of writing. So it's like a blog post a week. And
oh, good.
I think that's really good. I don't think I'm doing the in public part enough. I have this thing about promoting my work or having to tailor conversations or start conversations around things that I'm doing. I think that's where I need to improve on in my learning in public. I don't know where that came from, but I think, but the whole approach is something I can vouch for also, you know.
Yeah.
The best way to learn something is to try and teach it. Because you don't, like, to me, I'm like, I don't want to embarrass myself. If I'm going to put something out,
right,
to make sure that I do the best I can and, like, leave no spot unchecked. And, like,
right,
this is something I know. And then I'll be able to put it out, because people are mean. People.
Yeah, I know.
So I used to do this thing. I was going through my Reddit, and I used to do this thing, like, when I put an article out, I would put it in, like, web development. And that was like a year ago, and I haven't done that since, because people would post. So I think like the last comment I saw was, what is it with front end web developers and putting emojis in their articles? And I think that's, I know, like, on that was like the only comment on the art, like on the post. And I was just like, I think it broke me. But
oh,
I mean,
my gosh, that's horrible.
Yeah, I mean, but Reddit is Reddit, so...
Yeah,
it's
notoriously toxic.
Yeah,
but like you said, it forces you to feel like, okay, I really need to make this as thorough as possible, but at the same time, I don't think the fear of criticism should, like, become so strong that it stops you from putting your information out there, or, like, putting that article out there, or that video, or whatever. Because there's always going to be, like, somebody. Like, you could be a web developer who has 20 years of experience, and like you're one of the like best experts in the field, and there's going to be somebody who has something to say about it, like regardless. So at the same time, I try to like have a bound, like instead of letting that like stop me, I still try to like go forward with it. But like I've gotten some comments on my articles where like I know one time I wrote a two-part article about like building a a responsive NAD bar. So the first part was building it, and the second part was going to be making it responsive. And under the first part, somebody like commented like, oh, this isn't responsive. And I was like, yeah, like we're going to make it responsive in the next, in part two. Like you gotta, that's the whole point.
Relax.
But like, you're going to get comments like that regardless. So, I try to like not think about it, but it does hurt your feelings a little bit sometimes when like someone is like, well, actually, but yeah, it's just, it just comes with it, with the territory.
Yeah, but I mean, being open to positive criticism is always good, because then it's an opportunity to learn. And I think that's where the whole learning in public thing comes from.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's something I need to do better. But yeah, I mean, besides like the whole learning in public approach, how do you actually learn? Like what format works for you?
One thing, I'm a visual learner, so it's really important for me to, like, draw things out when I'm learning something. So one new thing I've been doing is I've been doing a lot of, like, doodles and things like that, which are, like, kind of childish. Yeah, but they help me to, like, visualize some of the more abstract coding concepts, like, I just revisited slicing and slicing a list in Python, because for some reason like it was not clicking in my head. So what I ended up doing was I ended up drawing a little doodle of a burrito and like literally slicing it up. And I like
that is that on your Twitter? I can't see that.
Oh, no, I haven't posted it on Twitter yet, but maybe I will. But I like to do doodles like that
to make things.
I might share that one. I mean, I just did one for a SQL course I took from Egghead, which was like, there's a command you can use to match patterns, kind of like with a rejects kind of thing. And I use like a little doodle of like, if you want to find a string that's exactly the same, if you want to find one that starts with the same letter, or if you want to find one that starts with the same letter and like has the same amount of like figures in the string, that kind of thing. So I posted that on Twitter, but anyway, that's a long way to say something really short. I like to draw things out. And also, I'm a huge note taker. So one of the things I like to do is I like to use lots of questions in my notes. So yeah, active recall is basically the learning technique of when you, like, okay, when you take an exam and the question asks certain questions, like the question asks you something, for you to figure out what the answer is, that's called active recall. So you're actively trying to recall the information based on the question. So it's kind of like an exam style of note taking, because studies show that like active recall is one of the best ways to learn something. So I try to like write my notes in that kind of format. So instead of saying like a list in Python is such and such, I'll say, what is a list in Python? So that it forces me to actively think like, okay, a list in Python is a collection of items, that kind of thing. So that's how I write my notes. I plan on writing an article all about that one day, sometime soon, hopefully. Just because
I'd love to read that. I think it's something I need to try.
Yeah, and I think it'll help a lot of people kind of be more effective with their note taking and like learning and stuff like that. So yeah, that's basically. And I read articles. I try to read articles and like watch videos and stuff like that. But I also like to build stuff. Like I'm trying to build I'm trying to figure out how to build a chatbot with Python. I don't know what the chatbot is even going to do, but I feel like that's a really cool project to like have. Or one of the first things I built was like a little simple rock, paper, scissors, shoot thing. And like I like to do that because it allows you to like really put to use the things that you're learning, like make direct application of whatever you're learning. A great way
I love building also, because I think it just cements all that information, because it's something you've actually done and it's not just something you're reading.
Yeah.
And for the chatbot, I think Twilio has a really cool tutorial on building a chatbot with Python.
Oh, cool.
So you can add like a WhatsApp integration if you want, or use the WhatsApp API rather.
That's cool. Hold on, I'm gonna Google it right now.
So I mean, sort of wrap things up. What do you wish you knew when you were learning or when you were getting into tech?
I think I wish I would have had a better idea of some of the learning paths you can take. Like, there's much more to tech than just web development. And then, or even like, there's much more to tech than just front end development. Like, I could, you know, I wish I would have knew that there were some more options for me. And then I also, one thing that I tweeted about this not too long ago, like, I'm starting to realize now how little diversity there is in tech. Which I don't know. I think I was like, yeah, it's like a big deal. And I think I was kind of living in a little bubble. Like, the person who introduced me to tech was a woman, and she was a Black woman. So I just assumed that, like, oh yeah, cool. Like, there must be like other Black women and other Black people, period, like in tech. And even like the camp I went to when I first really learned how to code was an all girls camp. So I just assumed that that's how things work. There was, you know, an even amount of everybody. But now I'm like starting to see that that's really not the case. And I don't even feel like I'm really in the industry yet, because I haven't technically had my first like real software engineering role. So I'm just going based off of what I've noticed in like online communities and on Twitter. And it's a little like daunting sometimes, but I try to not let it get to me. But that's definitely something I didn't realize at the beginning. I think I was just in my own little like bubble, and it's kind of been burst.
Yeah, so. I can relate. Like, getting into the online community, just like, it gives you so much, it exposes you to a lot of what's going on around the world, and it takes you out of your bubble, and you're like, oh crap, there's a lot more going on. Things aren't as nice as it should be. And I mean, why do you think people should pay attention to that, to the problem of diversity?
Well, one of the main reasons is that tech is like such a huge part of our society today. And you can make like a substantial living with tech. So obviously we need to like have more people involved in it. Like, more people need to have the chance to be able to take care of themselves and their families and like, you know, prosper. And then, because like everybody uses tech, everybody uses apps and websites and Facebook and Twitter. And if we're creating a product that is going to be used by everyone, the people who are making the product need to reflect the audience, right?
Yeah.
Like, we've heard stories of how AI is not detecting darker skin and things like that, or AI is interpreting darker skin people as monkeys. Like, that kind of thing should not be happening. And I think one of the main reasons why that kind of stuff happens is because the people in the room planning the app out or planning the feature out or building the feature don't look like us. Because if I was on the team, I would make sure that it wasn't pushed to production. Like,
yeah,
that was tested out, you know? So that's another big reason. Like, we need our products to be built by people who look like those who are going to use it. So this, and like, even if people, like, if a whoever like leads the team or the founder of the company, like, if your humanity doesn't push you to have a diverse team, then like, the market value should, like, you're going to make way more if you make a product that can be used by everybody. If just being a good person and like wanting to have a team isn't enough for you, you know? So yeah.
Then at least think about the business aspect
of it.
Yeah, totally. I definitely agree. I think it's something I like to see more of. And not just like diversity in terms of like all aspects of diversity. I think it's nice to have everyone represented, and even just that feeling of representation is super, important. I think I have one really, I don't know, what type of memory is this? It's a really good memory of the first time I spoke at a big conference, right? So I was out of the country, and there were only a few people who looked like me. And after speaking, I was so nervous. I prepared so well. I think I gave an okay presentation, or maybe I'm being too harsh on myself. I think I did amazing.
Yeah.
And like a friend walked up to me and he's like, "Hey, like I loved your talk and everything, but what I wanted to thank you for is telling me that this is possible, being where we are and being the only people like us. I didn't think it was possible for us to be able to present to so many people and be that, just being able to present and articulate yourself that well and just have that presence. And like you doing this has made it, you know, it's made it click in my head that there's so much more possible for me." And like, I was almost, like, even now thinking about it, it just makes me so sentimental.
Yeah, I totally understand. Like, that's so true. Representation really, really matters. Like,
And that's something I'm trying to, I think in my community here, that's something I'm trying to improve, sort of. Like, people, like, I have mixed feelings about it.
Yeah.
But there's, so I'm from Zambia, and there's not many people who are in tech, because to them it isn't something that's viable. And for me, I see succeeding for me is success for everyone, because then people can say it's something that's possible for us. And like you said, in like a profession or a field that really has the power to change a lot of people's lives, I think it's something more people should take up.
Yeah, absolutely. And like going back to learning in public, like that's another benefit of it. Like, because I always, when I first started out in tech, like I was on Twitter, I was kind of involved in a couple tech communities, but I wasn't as present as I'm trying to be now. Cause I'm always thinking like there could be someone out there, a woman or a black woman or a black person or whoever, somebody who looks like me, who would be watching me and them seeing me, like do my thing and talk about Python and be present and be on podcasts or do whatever could be encouragement they need to like get involved or think that it's a possibility for them. Cause I know that's how it was for me. So,
doing amazing, by the way, have I mentioned that?
Thank you so much. Thank you. I'm trying. But yeah, I think it's really important, and not that like, I don't want to paint diversity as something that's supposed to divide, because it's definitely not. Like, it's not supposed to make people feel bad. It's just supposed to be for everybody. Like, everyone should have a hand in it. So, yeah.
Definitely. I think this is the perfect note to end on. It's been amazing chatting with you, Ciara.
Likewise.
And if anyone wants to reach out to you online, where can they find you?
So, I'm on Twitter. My username is Ciorio, that's Ceorio _. And I also have a website.
Oreo. Is that intentional?
Yes.
Is that like your favorite snack?
Yes, it is. I love Oreos. it kind of goes on my name too. So I thought I was pretty clever when I came up with that.
Yeah. No, it is pretty clever.
And also my website is ciorafor.com.
Okay. Thank you so much for coming on, Ciara.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Rushing Forward. Send us your comments and suggestions at malgamves, malgamves, or codecastzm.